I'm Ivy.
I'm Rachel, and we are Swords and Sapphics, a podcast all about representation, queer media, women with a capital W, and a little bit of nonsense.
So start sharpening your swords, sip your tea, and join us as we obsess over the wonderful beings that are women. Hello.
Hello.
Where are we talking about this week?
Today, we're talking about publishing.
Yes.
Because we know a lot of people in the indie space, and we talk to traditionally published authors as well, mm-hmm. and I'm one of them, and we've talked a lot about writing, so we thought, why not continue it and make a little series out of it?
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. But before we get into it, I will admit I do not have a forgotten woman in history because I forgot.
She is the forgotten woman in history, and she's also the forgetful woman in history.
Yeah, it is what it is. Look, it's been a couple of days, but before we get into that, what are you enjoying these days?
What am I enjoying these days? We've been playing a lot of games.
I have a game open here right now because I'm waiting until I finish building.
Yeah. I think the last few days we've played more games than we've watched stuff.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
Because Ivy looks through the sales, as she mentioned in our last episode, all about games, by the mm-hmm. way, and she found some good ones. So then I had to have a look. So I downloaded Down in Bermuda, as she instructed me to. Mm-hmm. Again, listen to the last episode for context. Mm-hmm. And also, I downloaded Resident Evil, the Zero one, so the how it all began. That's an adventure.
I also, because from the same developer, there is also, of Down in Bermuda, there's also another puzzle game called Agent A. So we spent evening on FaceTime. Rach was playing Resident Evil. I was playing Agent A. We both had two separate conversations. Yeah. We both were extremely upset and irritated by everything that was happening on our separate Nintendos. Yeah. And because we couldn't figure out what we were on. It was quite the experience.
It was quite the experience. I have a complaint, actually.
Okay,
I think it's a valid
it.
One. Video game producers releasing different games in the series need to keep the controls the same for every game because I get used to one way of doing it and then they change. They do it with Assassin's Creed as well.
The thing is, like, even from the few times I got to play on PlayStation and stuff, to me, B is always for jumping every single time. So, like, if you're gonna go and change it, then you're just breaking the entire ecosystem.
Yeah. Every time I go in Skyrim after we've played Fortnite for ages, I shoot the wrong way and then end up dying because I'm not shooting. I think I'm shooting, but I'm not.
Every time I go on Disney from Fortnite, I want to jump.
Oh,
man.
Yeah. And don't even talk to me about going from Animal Crossing to Disney because the way you pick stuff up and harvest your food is so different.
Even opening the fucking tool circle.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just a whole thing. Mm-hmm. We need some unified way of doing things because I don't know if you know this about me. I'm autistic. I don't like change.
Wait, what? What? Why didn't you tell me?
I know.
I don't remember us having any discussion about it.
No, we've never talked about this.
You've never asked me about my opinion on this matter. I feel like I have a say.
Yeah. So yeah, there's that. What else?
Well, I'm currently playing Clash of Clans. I downloaded it yesterday on my phone. I used to play it a lot in my elementary school together with the Clash of Royals, I believe was the original one, and sort of these phone games. And yeah, I'm obsessed. Again, I have it open right in front of me because
I genuinely cannot function until I've played my Happy Clinic game on my phone. Like, even this morning I put makeup on, so I didn't have my usual sitting on my bed playing it time. So I was late. I decided to just do it afterwards because I don't feel right until I've played it.
I get it. It was my struggle right now is that I'm out of data because data, however you pronounce it, you guys. The thing is, I don't usually go outside, so I don't need that much because I'm constantly on my Wi-Fi. But because I have a lot of job interviews like last week, I was constantly on my phone in between, like, and traveling and shit. And now, when I had like some stuff to do outside of the house today, and I went outside and I couldn't turn it on because I was terrified. I need the little teeny tiny bits of data that I have left for like to search where to go and what train is coming. So like all I wanted was to stand at the bus and play the fucking game. And I couldn't. It's real struggle. It's real
Yeah,
struggle.
people will never understand.
No, this is just the first
It
world problem, you know.
really is. What else?
I have books to talk about.
Okay, talk to us about it.
Carissa Broadbent, she's one of the most now prominent indie writers. She got very huge with her second series, The Serpent and the Wings of Night. So I read the novella that is between the first and second book, and I read the second book. And you guys, it's vampires, you know. The first book is about like sort of these trials that games or whatnot that happens every 200 years, and the winner gets a wish from the goddess of night, their goddess. And it's so good. It's so good. It's just so motherfucking good. That's all. Thank you. It was phenomenal. I cried. I hurt. I laughed. I was in so much pain. It's great. 10 out of 10. We'll do it again. Cannot wait to do it
Yeah,
again.
let's suffer again. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, she's on my to be read list, but who isn't these days?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't see any books behind you, so I don't know what we're talking about even here.
Yeah.
I have a lot of space for books, so.
Clearly, yeah.
Yeah. Did you read anything?
Well, we started After Love.
Oh, yeah, we
Because
did.
for those who don't know, every we well, it started off as every month, but then we took several months to read Killing Eve, and we're still only halfway in. But we pick a book every so often, usually sapphic, that we want to buddy read together. And if you want to join us, you're welcome to, because we post it on socials and chat about it in our Discord, which is linked in our link tree, by the way. So come join us and chat with us. And this month we decided to pick up After Love by Tanya Byrne, which is a sapphic paranormal romance, I think. We're not that far in,
Young
so it's
adult.
yeah,
They're
young,
17, I feel like.
yeah. The MC is Asian, I think.
Yeah.
She wears a hijab, and she's also queer. Like she's already established she's queer. She's kind of finding her journey with that as a lesbian, I think. So, yeah, I think I always struggle with young adult because I'm not that age anymore. But I suppose that's always a sign that it's a good one because it's not targeting adults. It's targeted at who it's supposed to target, and I'm not that age group anymore. So
Yeah.
I kind of have to s judge it that way.
Yeah, I have to say, like, we're like what, 40 pages in.
Yeah.
It gave me such a almost a whiplash to go from like hardcore fantasy with smut to young adult. Like, I haven't picked up young adult in ages now, so this is really. It takes me, I need a minute to sort of like
Yeah.
take it in.
I'm
Yeah.
struggling with first person in general at the minute. I don't know what it is. But yeah, it does give me the vibe. Like, I can imagine really loving it if I was in my teens.
Oh yeah, for sure.
And I always think it's such a fucking shame that I never picked up a queer book when I was a teen.
Tell
I
me
don't
about
th
it.
like they weren't readily available anyway. Yeah, so it's kind of bittersweet, but I'm looking forward to seeing what happens next.
Yes, exactly. Same
And
here.
I've also been reading Prince of the Ancients by G.L. Preston, which is a dark fantasy, and the main character is a dragon shifter, I think. And it's getting good, actually. I'm really enjoying it. He's just met the love interest, I think, and a lot of the characters have like representation like ADHD, disability, queerness. So I'm excited to meet more of the characters, but the banter's really funny. I must say, I'm really enjoying it. I'm not used to reading from a male perspective, first person point of view, so that's like something to adjust to.
Yeah.
But it's really good. As
Good.
the more I get into it, the more I'm really enjoying it. Yeah.
Good. Good.
Yeah. Have you read anything else?
Nope. Again, I'm really not reading. I'm just playing games and writing these days.
Yeah.
That's all I have the brain capacity to do.
Yeah. Get it.
Yeah.
What about watching? What have you been watching?
Well, there is break in Grace and Station 19. So I was like, I want some drama. So I made the horrendous mistake of putting on 911. You know, I was thinking like Angela fucking Bassett, like it has to be phenomenal. Oh, what a naive little fool I was. It's the most cringeworthy writing I've seen in a very long time. Very long time. I'm speechless. The even like the calls, I don't feel like I'm rooted in reality at all. It's the most out of the park. Like the last one was Full Moon, and they went to some yoga where pregnant women were like, it was for pregnant women. One of them got like stuck in some position, so that's why they were called there. Five of them started giving birth. I shit you know, and they started like a domino effect.
Oh my
It's
goodness.
insane, man. I had
Some
to.
Umbrella Academy shit there.
It makes it's look, we all know Station and Grace are right. It's little, it's you know, it's drama. It's supposed to be like
Yeah.
soap opera type of thing. This takes it to another whole level. And
Yeah.
the dialogues are cringy, like the characters are meh. They cry without actually crying.
Oh gosh, yeah.
Oh,
It went to the Vampire Diaries School of Acting.
they could learn from them, man.
Oh
That's the thing. And so I was like, okay, I cannot do this. I turned it off in the middle of the episode. I was like, I can't do this anymore. Even though one of the firefighters is a queer woman who is married to a girly. It's played by, I don't know her name. She was in one of the old crime shows, Without Trace, I feel like it was called. But she's also in Station and Grace, and I love her. She's one of my favorite like side characters. I don't know what she's doing there. I don't know why she would do it to herself. She also had like some really weird line that was just so makes me like nauseous. So I was like, okay, I can't do this. I turned it off. And then there is another show with Rob Lowe. However, my Disney is in check, so I didn't know it was a show was named 911 something. And then I turn it on and I was like, wait, this is like weirdly similar with like the graphics and like the way it's done. And I'm like, no. And then there is the logo and says 911 something else. And I was like, okay, well, I turned that off too. Look,
Yeah.
I don't get it.
Well, this started because a video on Twitter was circulating of the one with Rob Lowe in the first episode where he tries to do chest compressions on a
So,
man who has been frozen and not well, his chest shatters. Which is obviously not the way that it would work.
No, but that's the thing. Like, look, I've been on the 911, the first one, TikTok a lot, right? And I saw, I feel like one of them, the bug guy, you know, the sort of fuck boy who I kept complaining
Yeah.
about. I feel like he's gonna be gay.
You know what? I always thought Alex was gonna turn out gay in Grey's Anatomy. I
Oh
don't
yeah.
know what it was. When I see an aggressively heterosexual bully, I'm like, maybe he will turn out gay.
I get it. I
Because
get
you just expect that kind of cheap storyline.
Right. Here I feel it is. He's not the
Okay.
bully, but he's a fuck boy.
Yeah.
So I was, and what's her face? Jennifer Love Hewitt is supposed to
Yeah.
be there too. So I was like, okay, like look, the names are there. Like you can trust them. And then I turn
Yeah.
it off. It's the most like it's so shit. Like 901 was canceled now after 6 seasons, but the other one is still going.
It's
I
crazy, man.
just I'm just
Yeah.
I'm even the thing with like Grace and Station is that even the extras are like phenomenal actors.
Yeah.
Like you are invested in the storylines on the side and they take time with it.
And they're often decent actors as well. Like we've had,
Yeah.
who've we had? We've had Neve Campbell was in an episode playing Derek's sister, and what's her face from One Day at a Time?
Oh, Jen, yes, Justine something.
Yeah.
Yeah, she plays the mom.
Yeah,
I can't
you always
remember.
end up seeing people that you've seen in other stuff and who
Yeah.
have got bigger since that role.
Yeah. Because again, like the even with the side characters, like the patients and stuff, like you will never ever see them again, but they give the performance of lifetime.
Yeah, they do.
Like,
And that's always surprising because I'm
yeah.
used to like crime shows that hire really shitty side actors.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But this was just, this wasn't it. I just, I'm shocked. I don't get it. Also, I'm really confused by the fact that Angela Bassett is the producer of it. She start, I feel like, especially now, like she has the Marvel money, like she was nominated for Oscar for the phenomenal things she's done. Like I keep quoting that scene that got her the Oscar to write all the fucking time. So like
Yeah.
I don't get why she's still there. Like do you need help blink twice, man? Because I just don't get it. I don't get it.
I guess being in a series provides more of a steady income than a movie. But like, does she really need it when she's a Marvel actress?
First of all, and second of all, I feel like there would also be other options for them,
Yeah.
not for the like sake of their dignity.
Yeah.
I just don't get it. It's just honestly, it keeps me up at night. I don't feel like I just need to move on from this. Oh God.
Yeah. I've been watching, I'm back on my X-Files shit. I don't know why, like, I've just not been in the mood to watch anything that I've been binge watching. So I went back to the X-Files, and there's something so personal about the way Scully is in danger every fucking episode. And Mulder ends up going to her and be like, "Are you okay?" Because they're clearly in love. I'm on the beginning of season three now. I just got Baby Jack Black in an episode, and he was, oh my God.
Yeah.
N 90s Jack Black is something to behold. Thank you. Thank you to the gods. But yeah, I'm enjoying it.
Good.
The conspiracies is something I'm very much used to because my auntie raised me on conspiracy theories. So nothing is too out there for me. Yeah. Just
Yeah.
and Gillian Anderson, man.
That's
So
all.
awesome.
That's all you need, really, in life.
The reason I started, and she's the reason I'll continue.
Correct. That's how it should be. Well, I see Dungeons and Dragons, the Honor of Thieves. I cannot pronounce the word, man. Thieves. Thieves. Thieves.
Oh, thieves.
There we go. Got it. Did it. Anyway, it was so good. And I feel it's just, it's very light. You can see what's being like shown to you. It's not in dark. The actors are it, they have fun with it. Reggae Jean fucking Page, man, could be a comedy actor. Like, he nailed it. He absolutely nailed it. It's the storyline was very much found family, like Michelle Rodriguez and Chris Pine are the main characters. But they even at the beginning said, like, we like brothers and brother and sister, and they keep at it with for the rest of like the movie. And because like at the beginning of the movie, Chris Pine's wife is killed and he has a little daughter. And then Michelle comes in to like sort of help him. So they raise the kid together, but still like are very much like sibling love. And it's just so pure and precious. It's amazing. And they didn't rely on CGI. They used, you know, they actually did the costumes and like used special effects rather than just having it all digitally. And it, you can feel it. It's very vibey. There's the atmosphere that you want. It's just perfect, perfect, perfect. Thank you.
Beautiful.
Thank you for
And
coming to my TED Talk.
you also watched Guardians of the Galaxy last night.
Look, I still not gonna talk about it a lot because, you know, there is the time, usually 2 weeks after a Marvel movie came out that for spoilers. So I'm not gonna, but
Well, people are not keeping to that because I've already seen one of my Twitter friends tweeting about it.
I know. I look, the thing is, like, there's this sort of unset rule, and like fan pages are with it. If people on TikTok are posting something about it, they put like spoiler warnings. But some people just don't give a fuck, and it's enraging because just have some damn respect to other people who don't have that much time or opportunities to go to see it. Especially with these movies. Anyway, it was phenomenal. It was great. I cried so much. Look, the last time I cried this much in movie theater was during Endgame, and I'm not sure I cried that much even. So I feel like that's all I have to say to that. Yeah, it was something. Shall we get to the our main subject of this episode?
We shall. So, it was just Camp Nano. We wrote some stuff. Many people used it as an opportunity to finish their book. And some people who haven't necessarily done it before might be wondering what comes next.
So what
We
does come
posted
next,
what does
Mrs.
come next?
Traditionally an indie published writer?
Well, we posted a blog post about this as well, about kind of everything from starting your manuscript to polishing it off. So I guess if you're with your first draft now, it's time to go back and edit. I would recommend taking a few weeks away from looking at it first because a lot of things change when your eyes haven't been on it for a while. Kind of like the toys in Toy Story. The words jumble about and have a play, and then you come back and you're completely surprised by what you
That
find there.
that's like amazing metaphor. I did not expect it.
Yeah,
Amazing.
I'm all right
Amazing.
about
Amazing. You're really getting into it. Wonderful. Keep going.
it. Look, writing's like the only thing I feel like I know anything about, and sometimes I don't even feel like I know anything about it. Yeah. So yeah, take some time away. And when you go back to editing it, there's a lot of advice out there to like change the font, which I've done before, and that helps. I usually put it on an extra zoom because when I first look at it, I'm just using it on the normal 100%. So it's good to kind of get in a little closer up with the words. Some people print it out, but that's not necessarily the best for the environment. So it really depends how long your manuscript is, I guess. And not that there's anything wrong with printing it out, but like, if you don't need to, then don't. But if it helps, then do. Go through it with a red pen if you do. You know, get all editory. What else? Yeah. Well, when I went to uni, they recommended like three edits through. So, like one for structure and the developmental side of things, one for kind of line editing, making sure all the sentences and grammar and spellings are all correct, and then another as like the final check. I don't do that. I do my developmental and line edit in one. And if I'm on a deadline, that's really all I do. But
Yeah.
if I'm not, but if you do have time, I would recommend going through it at least three times, if not more. It really depends how much editing you have to do.
Gonna say it. I hate editing.
Yeah, it's not the best.
It's horrible.
Yeah.
I'm not for it. Yep. I
I
can't.
enjoy going back to what I've written and like seeing it as a whole, because obviously you've just been writing these little bits for so long, and then suddenly it's a whole novel and it reads as one. But it's really tough, and it can take a really, really long time, and it can be very grueling. And I think a lot of people forget that. Like, right, people can say writing is easy till the cow has come home, but at the end of the day, it takes a lot of fucking discipline to not just sit and write it. What are you laughing at?
What did you say? Until the cows come home.
Never
That
heard that one before.
a
Yeah.
saying? No. Amazing, thank you.
You're so fucking welcome.
I'm sad. Keep at it. Thank
Yeah, so look, you're gonna hate it. You're gonna hate your manuscript as you edit, and then you're gonna love it, and then you're gonna hate it some more, and you're gonna be like that for a while. Like, I got so sick of reading through Honeymoon for One and Summer at the Scottish Castle. Like, I didn't even want to see it anymore. And I loved the story. And like, every time I went back to one of my favorite scenes, I still love it, but it just gets so exhausting to have to keep going back to it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, really, as with writing, you need to find ways to make it fun. I like to stick post-it notes everywhere. My house was littered with post-it notes, because when you've got a lot of edits in front of you, you kind of forget what you're even supposed to be looking for at that point. Another tip, go in the search bar, and if you know you're prone to using words, like repetitive words, like just, only, but, not but, don't do but. What do mine? Mine was always describing eyes. Like, just anything that you know you repeat too much, go in the search bar and look for it, and that way you can just center yourself on those exact problems. Yeah. And just. Did I say just?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm trying to think what other words there are. I notice a lot of like slowly, suddenly in people's writing. Like, I remember reading City of Ash by Cassandra Clare. She had slowly written down three times on one page. And that's another thing. Like, you're not going to catch everything. So, all you can really do is do what you can do.
Yeah. There you go.
Great wise advice.
Put
Like,
that on a t-shirt.
you're going to miss stuff. And that's why it's good to get beta readers. When you think the manuscript is polished enough for other eyes, get beta readers or peers or friends and family to have a read through. People struggle accepting criticism, but you're going to get some.
Yeah.
And like, at the end of the day, it's so hard because writing's such a personal thing. But at the end of the day, like, I don't even know, man. At the end of the day, it's going to make things better. Like, I remember when I started uni in my creative writing workshops, and my tutor was like, you can cut this out and cut this and cut this as well. Because I was over describing everything. And back then I thought writing was just about words sounding good. And now I know that it's about telling the story the most efficient and concise, but also gripping way that you can, which is not an easy skill to have. So it's a, then it's about honing that. And like, if people have things to say, then listen. And you might not agree with them. That's okay as well. But it's always good to kind of get a fresh perspective and maybe it will help. But do be prepared to cut shit out, that even if you're very attached to the pretty sentences. Because I think another thing is that you, every sentence and every word needs to have a purpose, even if it's just a small one. Like, some, a lot of people go on tangents and stuff, and I'm like, why are you telling me this? I don't want to know this. So, yeah, it's just, I think a big part of it is learning to cut things down, especially if you're an overwriter. Yeah. Anything to add?
I don't think so. Maybe also, like, you mentioned cutting out, like, sentences and words, but also scenes.
Scenes, sometimes, yeah.
That's something that, like, terrifies me once I, like, go back to what I've already done. Like,
yeah. I had to cut one out of the Highland Baby just now, where Jem, no, where Howard gives Paisley a canary to look after because she's preparing to be a mother, and she was, and he wanted her to get experience looking after a species, a being, a living being. So she kind of, she went back to the pub, and Jem was like, I don't want a bird. And they had, like, and it was very funny to me, but, like, my word count is getting a bit ridiculous, so I was like, okay, this has to go. I had to, I copied and pasted it in a separate Word document, and doesn't necessarily mean that you never have to see that scene again. You can keep it for other purposes. You can keep it as bonus scenes, or you can kind of cut and paste any stuff that's still important to other chapters, you know. But it's just kind of learning to let go.
Yeah.
To let go of some things. Yeah. And the rule show, don't tell, is always a handy one. I know there's a lot of mixed things about it. And of course, it completely depends on what you're writing and at what point in the story it is and stuff like that. But there should always be a balance between, like, dialogue, action, description. And you like, if there's a way to kind of show things happening through action, like, instead of saying this character doesn't like this character, show it through a scene where they outwardly show that is the best example I can think of.
Traditional or indie? Do tell. Wait in. You are both.
And both. Both
self-published and both traditionally.
It completely depends on what you're looking for. Like, for me, indie was a really great way to start, because back then, all I really, really wanted, like, I was impressed that I'd even got to a point where I'd written something that I could publish, and that was published by my freelance publisher, on Scribd. So, like, being able to then make those a paperback, and I was able to make my own covers, make sure I was happy with them, and, you know, learn how it all works, really. Like, I didn't understand any of it before. It kind of just felt a completely different world than what I was used to. So, yeah, I definitely recommend indie. It's a big learning curve if you've never done it before. There's a lot of work that goes into it that people don't realize, and, you know, you have to be prepared to spend some money as well. Like, it's not just something you can put out there and hope that will kick, like, blow up and you'll get lots of royalties. You obviously have to consider paying for editors, paying for cover artists if you need to, stuff like that.
Which, but as we're talking about it, you're both. So,
yeah.
If you're looking for someone.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I have links in my link tree for, like, the services I offer, and I do kind of offer, like, cheaper services, just because I know indie publishing is difficult. It's a lot. But yeah, I think that's a lot of the reason why a lot of people do go to indie, and I can't blame them for that, because obviously traditional publishing depends a lot on what the market wants to see. They can change a lot. Like my title for Summer at the Scottish Castle was changed, and at first I wasn't that keen. And it's something you kind of have to be prepared for, that they're looking not based on what your story is necessarily, but what the audience, what will be most successful in an audience. So it's very much commercial based. And there's a lot of conversations happening at the minute about traditional publishing and how poorly writers are getting paid. I've definitely earned a lot more from freelance writing my novellas than I have with my advances, like as a whole. But that's not to say that one's less rewarding than the other, because of course I've seen that, like, when my traditional published books come out, people then go to my indie books after they've read it, because I have the benefit of someone else promoting my work for me, and you know, having a publishing name attached to me as well.
I think, like, in this, the combination of both has to be like the best combination there is, because especially with the traditional publishing, the publisher promotes a book to a completely different audience that you're in. Like, completely different. I can't stress that enough. Especially like just from indie to traditional, and then the genres and like the target groups. And then of course, as you said, once that happens, oh, your guys are really cute right now. As that happens, of course, they people who fell in love with you from the new audience will go back to the previous works you've done.
Yeah. And I'm definitely in a unique position there, and I know that. And it's weird because, like, I never planned any of it. It just kind of fell from one thing to another, and now we're here, and it's great. Look, neither of them are necessarily going to give you a living wage. Like, the average for a debut author in traditional publishing is single thousand figures. Does that make sense? I think it's about, like, well, I'll just tell you, mine was 3K per book, and they split it up into payments, in, like, depending on what stage you're at. And my agent said that was pretty average, and the same for traditional publishing. I mean, indie publishing. I think they say, like, you're about mo the average makes about 1,500, 2,000, 3,000, something like that.
Did not hear that one.
I don't know. Maybe I'm getting mixed up, but yeah,
Yeah.
it really, everyone is different, and you have to be prepared for a lot of slow sales either way.
I
I've
feel
found
like
that.
that's recently I saw a article being released about how the usually people who debut their first novel, it has negative impact on their mental health.
Yeah.
And I can't help but think, but because it's we have this sort of ingrained idea that especially like even with like acting and stuff, that you have that one big immediate break, like it happens overnight. When in effect, especially with publishing, like it's slow,
It's
because
very slow.
it just even if like people will buy thousands of the books and on day one, they will still have to read it and then to take the time to talk about it. So just from that, it is very slow.
It
And of
is, yeah.
course, that's not the reality, but yeah, it's still like even I struggle, like I'm breaking that mindset sort of still.
Yeah, and every stage that I've been at has been so exciting because it's all progress. But that doesn't mean I don't necessarily feel disappointed sometimes that it's not a bit more. Just be like, because you do put in a lot of work, it is a lot of work, and, like, I suffer with a lot of burnout from it, and I very rarely feel like I've been compensated for the amount of work that I've put in. And I'm nowhere near financial independence yet, and I'm very lucky that I live at home and even have the opportunity to write, to have the time to write and do what I love, because a lot of
authors are kind of struggling to balance between like their 9-to-5 job and their writing.
Yeah, honestly, that's one of the things that terrifies me, like because I'm in between jobs right now, so I had time to write basically daily. I'm doing sprints with you now, and it's so much fun, and it brings me so much joy and sort of even like purpose in life, and I'm so excited about it. And just I have to go to work. Of course, like I especially now, it's just I have to be there as soon as possible. But also losing this is just I'm gonna mourn it a lot,
Yeah,
man. A lot.
understandable. Like, especially as neurodivergent people, like, we spend a lot of energy doing basically anything. And I can't even imagine having to work another job and then wanting to come home and write, because no matter how enjoyable it is, it's still work at the end of the day. And it takes a lot of brain cells to even put words together. It really does. You've had your beta reads. You should go back and polish what, you know, with using the feedback they've given you. And now it might be a good time to get a sensitivity reader, hire one if you think it's needed.
Especially if
Any
you're involved a marginalized group, make sure to not just insult or hurt people is very basic.
Yeah.
It just even from ignorance, like of course you cannot know anything, so sensitivity readers are
Yeah.
always the best way to go.
And then, you know, when everything feels like you can't possibly do any more work on that manuscript, I guess it's time to decide what comes next. So if you're looking to be traditionally published, it's, you know, it's good to start compiling lists of agents, publishers who are looking for what you're selling, and that involves putting together a query package, so a cover letter and a synopsis, which details every major, well, not even major, every minor and major step in the story that kind of leads it to the end. It's good to get comparison titles, you know, like Mamma Mia meets, I can't think of another film.
James Bond.
James Bond, yeah, I guess that would be an interesting one. Right now.
That movies, and that's the only one that
Yeah, and it's also good to use the names of like other people in your genre, other authors, you know, just to make sure so that you can show that you're aware of the current trends. And tropes is another good one, especially if you're a romance author. Any tropes that is kind of around, it's always good to include those in the query package. Yeah. And you'll also write a blurb, which is a short synopsis that kind of just details who the character is, what they're doing, where they're going, and what the genre is and the length and stuff like that. It's also good to look at the expected length, like the standard length word count wise, because different genres have different standards. I know that romance is like 70 to 90K. So, you know, you're less likely to gain success if you're not there. Although my romance novel was 40K when I was querying it. So it really depends, you know, like there's always a chance, if you think it works. At this point, your manuscript is kind of a product, and you need to make it sellable, really, in the best way you can. What else? It's good to look for pitch events on social media. There's a lot on Twitter. I was pitching for mine through there, and it's also a good place to meet new friends who are also going through the same things. And of course, you get the visibility for agents and publishers there who are looking to. For new authors, really. A lot of agents have manuscript wish lists on their website, so make sure you look through that and make sure you're kind of comfortable with who you're querying with, because obviously if they're not in your genre, or if they've if they've been behaving badly on social media, which some do, unfortunately, you
We've had
know.
that,
Yeah, just it's always good to do a bit of research before, at least before you make the final deal, if you get that far, because a lot of publishers aren't exactly trustworthy.
The person you need to trust is your agent to take care of your little baby.
Absolutely. Because at the end of the day, they're going to be championing your work and selling your work for you. So you need to make sure you're on the same wavelength there.
And also, like, taking care of you and your rights and your what you deserve in exchange for that.
Yeah, don't be afraid to put your foot down if you don't agree with something. It's, you know, they need to be flexible as well. It's not just about you.
One thing I heard recently on a podcast, I perhaps mentioned it, is about negotiation. Because a lot of the times, especially women, after like years of what's ingrained into our brains since we come to this world, when you come into the room and sit down at the table, that's where the negotiation should start. Do not come there with like this. You usually do the negotiation in your head before that. Like, you know, perhaps even like with when you're negotiating pay, you're like, okay, that's too much. You know, they're not going to give it to me. So you already settle for less than you're entitled to. So prepare that, prepare the reasons for what you do, for why do you think that you deserve it? Like, especially with the pay, like, do a market research too. That's why also we should talk about like how much advances the writers are getting, because now you know what's the standard and what's usual and how much this person got for their first book ever and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's always good to know. And I think a big part of looking for the right agent is how transparent they are about things like that. Like, I know from the get-go, my agent was extremely, you know, she walked me through everything. I was very new to this side of publishing. And she, you know, told me if she thought I deserved more money or less or whatever. So, yeah, it's, I guess a lot of it is just gut instinct when it comes to choosing the right person to represent you, and also just making sure there's somebody trustworthy, somebody who will do the absolute best for your book. And if not, then that's okay, look somewhere else. There's always another option with publishing, which is one of the great things. They might it and it can take years. Like, full transparency, a lot of people are not published until they're in like middle-aged or higher, but obviously we're in a time now where that's changing a little bit. There are a lot of authors in their 20s, which is great, but that doesn't
you
necessarily...
included, you know that, right?
Yeah. Me too. But that doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to happen right away. I was very lucky that it did for me. Like, it was a very quick process. And I still can't believe that I don't know how, like, I don't know why, but it just did. But, like, if you're not prepared for rejection yet, maybe it's not time to query yet, because you're going to get a lot of it. Oh, also, be careful with hybrid publishing. If your publisher is asking you for money, they're not a genuine publisher. Like, you should not be paying someone to publish your work. Absolutely not.
And you do not pay agent before you get the deal.
Nope. Agents take a percentage of what you earn. So the money goes to them. They'll take their percentage and give you the rest. That's how it works.
Yeah.
Make sure you know where your money is going, who's getting it. It's a wild ride, I must say.
Yeah.
I still don't necessarily understand everything about it.
Yeah, we learn everything. It's something new every day.
Yeah.
Especially with Amazon and Kindle and shit like that.
There's a lot of digital first publishers out there now. So I think one of my things was, I'm a little bit sad that my books are not yet in shop shelves. You know, like I think that will be my next goal, to try and get to a point where my books are on bookshelves in shops, like Waterstones, because that was always what I dreamed of. And of course, society is changing with ebooks and stuff, but you never know.
Yeah. You know, one always thinks a lot about that sort of, you have either the slow process or like the overnight success. And I can't help but think like the slow one has to be better in the long term, just from like you always have something to go for. Like
Yeah,
you always have
absolutely.
a little goal to.
Yeah.
That's just,
Yeah.
yeah.
Yeah, because I guess what do you do when you've kind of met it all?
Yeah, exactly. I would go through another existential crisis, and I have one
Yeah.
every year, so like
And imagine the pressure if you was instantly successful.
yeah.
Because I found it really difficult to write my second book, even when my first one hadn't come out yet, because I was like, what if Claire, my agent, doesn't like it? What if my publisher doesn't like it? What if people like one of my books but not the other, or they don't like either of them? And it, like, I can't even imagine what it must be like to have a massive audience for them
Yeah.
with like so many expectations.
And just even from like, okay, so you have managed to write a whole series, it's great, and now you have to go for something new. I would be a fucking wreck. I would just be gone. Goodbye.
Yeah.
Never to be seen again.
Yeah. It's yeah. It's and like I'm back at the stage now where I finished my two book deal that I got. So it's not like starting again. Like I have this behind me now and I have my agent who kind of knows my style and knows what I need. But it's still kind of like, did they want do should I write be writing the same stuff that I was publishing before? Like, should I be trying something different? Should I be branching out? And it's never gonna be easy, especially like once people start reading your stuff. But I guess to combat that, you can only trust your gut. You need to, at the end of the day, you need to be passionate about what you write before anybody else is, because you're not going to enjoy the process if you're not. And then what's the point, really? You can be in a much easier profession that you're not passionate in and get paid a lot fucking more for it. So you may as well write something you're proud of and that you love doing.
Yeah, especially I feel like you should also settle the reason why you wanted to be published in the first place and in what way. Like, don't do it for the money. Just don't.
Yeah, no,
If
you're
you
never.
want quick money, that's not gonna happen.
This is not quick money. Even if you decide to opt for indie publishing, I promise you it's not quick
Yeah,
money.
so.
It's really not. It's a
Yeah.
slow, slow process. And I can't emphasize enough. And it's gonna be hard. Like, I know all these things logically that it's normal. A lot of people go through this, blah blah blah. But it still hurts sometimes. Like you still get down about it, and it's disheartening with everything that's happening anyway, like with the KU state of the sales there and stuff. Which is another reason why it's important to have an agent there to reassure you when it gets overwhelming. Sometimes you need to know you're still on the right track. And I guess if you're not looking to query and you're looking to go indie, it's a good time to start getting on social media, which we'll talk about more in the next episode with Ivy, because she's our marketing specialist.
I
The indie community is a really, really great place to kind of share everything. And there's always like people organizing things, like even if it's just featuring people in newsletters or doing lists and book bingos, stuff like that. Things like our Indie Author Spring Festival that Hayley Anderson hosted last month for us. There's always a way to kind of connect with that community, and it's good to set that up before you start publishing, because then you'll have that support when you need it. And also you need to offer that support back. It's
I was
not a
about to
one-sided
say,
thing.
yeah, it's yeah. If you're gonna ask for their help, you have to do the same.
Yeah.
We've seen people who do not return it at all.
No.
And it's just insulting and rude.
It is, yeah. You like at this point, you need to be part of the community, otherwise it's going to be rough for you. Because there's nothing like more rude and disrespectful than like somebody just promoting their work on somebody else's post without consent, and they do nothing to do for others. Like it gets really icky. But if you're looking for a place to start on Twitter, I would recommend following Indie Book Spotlight. We're there
And we retweet a lot of indie authors as well. So it's that's a great place. And also Instagram is great as well. I would follow Hayley Anderton there. She has a big following now of indie authors, and she can direct you to the right people too. Mm-hmm. So if you've reached that point, then it's time to hire an editor. Somebody who can develop mental edit, first of all, and then somebody who can copy edit and proofread. Formatting is another thing. Formatting isn't easy, so a lot of people hire a formatter. Others kind of learn how to do it themselves. I think there's a lot of resources out there on how to do that, but it goes over my head. So, and there are apps that do it for free. Like I use Readsy. Kindle has its own app, I think. Kindle Create. Yeah. And cover design, you need, either hire someone, or if you're looking to make your own, Canva has a great variation of book covers and stuff like that. So
I do have to say, Reg makes the most beautiful covers I've ever seen. And now, even when I needed like a little cover for my highlights on Instagram, I sent it for like 10 minutes before I said, I can't do it. So she took charge, had it done in 5 minutes. It's beautiful. It's amazing.
Thank you.
Yeah, she's always the one to go to with that.
Thank you. Yeah, it's good fun. But that's another thing. Like, it's good to kind of get a bit of a grasp on graphics if you're planning on marketing things for yourself, which we can talk about that again next episode. And then it's time to publish, I guess. It's good to set a pre-order date, get a lot of hype around it. Offer ARCs. I go through Booksprout. It's £10 a month. And then you'll get reviews in advance before the book's even out, which is always a good look. You know, people will go to Amazon and review it the day it's out. That's great. There is a lot of offering stuff for free. Like, if you want readers, if you want to get people in, you might have to offer things for discounts or free.
Look, overall, like, this area of influencer marketing is so huge, and I will talk more about it later because I will dive into details about it and stuff, but you cannot do it on your own.
No,
you just can't. That's it. So like, you have to be prepared to give out some free copies for sure.
And again, like, reading other authors' works, because if they see that you're reading their book, they might be more likely to pick up yours. You know, kind of like a tit for tat situation.
Yeah.
But apart from that, apart from marketing, it's good to know what publisher to go through, where to publish your own books. For me, I try to avoid Ingram Sparks because I've read a lot of dodgy stuff about them, and kind of the cost is higher. You can publish for free on KDP, which is Amazon Kindle's own, which is fine. The royalties are fine. You can enroll in KU there, so people can, who have, you know, Kindle Unlimited, can download your book, and you get paid per page, but it's not much. So I would consider whether that's what you want, because if you go through KU, you can't then publish on other subscription sites, so you can't go wide if your book's on KU. So if you're wanting to go wide, if you're wanting to have like your book on Barnes and Noble and Kobo, Smashwords, things like that, it might be worth not enrolling in KU, or just enrolling in KU for the first period, which is I think 3 or 4 months, and then you can go wide afterwards. And the way that I do that is on Drafter Digital, which publishes to all of the websites, basically anywhere where you can grab a book.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that's really, really it for the publishing side of things, I think. Is there anything that I didn't cover? I don't think so.
No.
You might choose to do audio books. So, you know, that's another thing that you need to be prepared to spend money for. A lot of people do Kickstarters to kind of raise money to get their audiobook in progress. But yeah, that's really it. Offering your books in as many formats as possible. Like, it's good to get a paperback version available. There's a kind of, oh, we can talk about that next week, but once you reach 50 reviews, Amazon spotlights you a bit more, I think. I can't think of much else. It's all a journey, man.
If there's anything we've missed that you think of, please do let us know. We're happy to talk about everything and anything.
Yes.
I don't think that was the right order. Anything and everything, I think it is.
Does it matter, really? No. Isn't it the same thing?
Yeah, but it just didn't sound right.
Okay.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. Well, that's it for now. And as we mentioned, in 2 weeks, in our next episode, we will be talking about marketing and all that, because there is a lot.
There is a lot. And thank God Ivy is here to help me with mine.
Yeah.
Again, there's more stuff on our website. We posted an article pretty much, I think it was after NaNoWriMo in November, so that might be helpful if you want to see stuff written down, because I'm not good at talking out loud.
Sometimes, you know, you're very good at what you're saying, and sometimes you say such shit. Honestly, yeah. This woman. Let's remember.
Support women's rights.
But most importantly, support women's wrongs and support indie writers.
Yes, absolutely. That was a good one.
That was a good one.
And traditional published authors, especially if they're debuts, because actually they're not paid that much, guys.
Yeah. That's true. So we shall see you later, alligator.
In a while, crocodile. Thank you for listening to Swords and Sapphics. You can enjoy a new episode every Wednesday.
While waiting, you can visit our website, swordsandsapphics.com, and find lots of articles, interviews, and guest pieces.
Feel free to contact us with any requests, questions, or inquiries through a form on our website or directly to our email, swordsandsapphicspodcast@gmail.com.